It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on Newstalk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitude, and techniques using the proven and highly successful Sandler training methodology. This week my guest trainer is Mike Montague. Mike is from Kansas City, and he's our home office National Director of Content Marketing. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
So tell our listeners, before we get started, kind of a warm-up here, how did you get involved in Sandler in the first place?
Well, I have a several-part Sandler story, but in short, you've probably heard my dad, Steve Montague, on the show if you've been a regular listener to Jim here. He bought a Sandler training location in Kansas City in 1994, and I took my first training when I was a junior in high school before I had anything to sell, and I've been on and off involved in the training with him over the last 20 years, and then about 7 years ago, I became a full-time trainer with him and helped him run the office here in Kansas City. And then 2 years ago, I moved to the corporate team to be the director of content marketing. And I always say that's two parts. I put a little bit of Sandler into our marketing that we're doing, and I put a little bit of marketing techniques into the Sandler sales stuff that's been so great over the years.
Yeah, and Mike has really upped the Sandler game by providing us some tremendous tools. Like if you've ever read our pamphlet, LinkedIn, The Sandler Way, most of that is his brainchild, and he really leads the charge in helping us marshal our forces to use social media the Sandler way. So that's going to be our topic for today. I'm curious though, Mike, how old were you when you first took training?
16 is when I took the foundations course for the first time over the summer.
And what was your application? Did you use it for dating or?
I did a lot in college. Thanks for bringing that up. sales training is not a bad thing to have, especially the bonding and rapport and questioning strategies. And it did help me a lot in my youth, not only in business, but also in my personal life. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's one of the things about Sandler we often hear within a few months of somebody just joining us. You know, I thought I was signing up for management training or customer service training or sales training, but instead I'm really getting some life lessons. In fact, once at a Christmas party, I had a woman come up to me and she said, first thing she said was, oh, so you're Jim Stevens. And I was immediately defensive and I said, yeah. And she said, well, you've been working with my husband. And she starts rifling through her purse and she says, so apparently he listens to you more than he listens to me. I've been telling him some of these things for years and he ignores me. Here's my list of things I want you to work on with him.
Oh, that's awesome. I haven't heard one like that before. That's great.
Really hilarious. So Mike, let's talk about social selling for salespeople, not marketers. I think it's commonplace to get confused between those two roles.
Yeah. And it's one of the reasons we came up with that LinkedIn, the Sandler Way book that you mentioned, which was a collaboration between Sandler Training and LinkedIn themselves. So I wrote the Sandler Training part. A guy named Coca Sexton wrote the LinkedIn part, and both companies released this book because when I was looking around for social media help as a salesperson and trying to sell more, I couldn't find anything. I went to Amazon and there's like 40,000 books on social media marketing, and there wasn't really anything about selling at the time. And even now, if you read the books for selling, they're all marketing tactics. They tell you to join the maximum number of groups, add everybody in your suggested connections, make your audience as big as possible, and then you blast messages out to this audience and hopefully somebody buys from you. Well, I don't know about you, Jim, but that to me sounds a lot like marketing and not selling. To me, selling is what happens after somebody clicks on that stuff. What happens when they become a lead, and how do you start more interesting conversations that lead to sales? Not how do you, and individual conversations, not how do I communicate to an audience? That's a marketing.
No, I think that's a good point. And I think if you are in sales and you default to more of a marketing role, it has more of a passive nature to it. And if you're in a passive mode of trying to generate leads or connections, I think your return on investment is going to be extremely low. I think we need to be far more active, which in my mind, active is really identifying who is my client, where are they, and figuring out a way to get in front of them. So what are some of the strategies you've found to be proactive in that quest of finding an ideal client?
Absolutely. I think there's three things that you can do as a salesperson which will actually bring value to you. So there are definitely benefits to the marketing approach. If your company wants to go big and build a large audience, I highly recommend it. That's what I do for Sandler now. Mm-hmm. But as a salesperson, you really want to think about three things. How do I add more prospects to my pipeline? how do I get more information about those prospects to make sure I'm calling on the right people, they're qualified, or I can do better bonding and rapport, things like that? And then how do I add more opportunities to my sales funnel? And that's a little bit different because opportunities could be with existing clients. They could be referrals. They could be prospects too. But when I think about social selling, I think about how do I add more people, information, or opportunities to my pipeline?
So let's drill down into that opportunities piece because that is an area where the listeners could be a little bit confused. What does an opportunity mean? So what are you looking for when you're seeking an opportunity?
Well, Jim, I know you know that there's a lot of different types of opportunities. And the biggest way to separate those are qualified and unqualified opportunities. So unqualified, we can go ask anybody to buy what we have, but that's not going to be very successful. The ones that are great are really highly qualified referrals that are people raising their hand and saying, hey, I have a need that you can solve. And those close at a much higher rate than the others. In between there, we can have anything from leads to suspects to prospects. And what I think is interesting about social selling is we can take people from complete stranger and lead them all the way through the funnel to qualified prospect. And it's really about how do we find people at the level that they're at and then make some sort of introduction or ask that's appropriate to where they are in that funnel. So for me, it's really about how do I meet somebody and start the conversation to find out whether they're qualified.
I think the holy grail in social selling is to get somebody to some level of call to action. I'm trying to get them to reach out to me. In my experience, though, Mike, that's not as successful as you might hope. You can spend an awful lot of money trying to get somebody to download this ebook or click on this link, only to find out they did it because they're curious, but they're not qualified. Now you're spending time chasing somebody who really isn't all that interested. How do I distinguish between those two?
Well, I think, again, you're thinking about the marketing approach versus the sales approach. So in marketing, we want them to take a call to action and download a white paper. In a sales situation, we really want to start a conversation. So what I'm looking for are qualified trigger events that cause me to reach out and start the conversation. Now, in today's world, that conversation could take place in a lot of different ways. It could be text message, social media, direct message. It could be a phone call, or it could be a face-to-face meeting. But the key word there was trigger event. What would cause, in your world, somebody to become more qualified than another? And the example I always use, Jim, is real estate. That if you say, hey, who do you know that is looking to buy a house? Chances are by the time they're looking to buy a house, they are already working with a real estate agent, or
Good
by the
point.
Time anybody would know that, right?
Good point.
So how can we use social media or other things to get information about what happens before that? So for example, who do you know or who in your network has recently had a baby, gotten divorced, got a job promotion, you know, is going to be changing locations or city, things like that, that would happen before somebody needs to buy a house. Does that make sense?
It really does. It's the concept of I need to find out what is the leading indicator that they might need me instead of the lagging indicator that, oh yeah, I'm looking for a house. My guest today is Mike Montague. Well, Mike, give your contact information in case there's somebody who'd like to reach out to you.
Sure. The easiest way to do that is to find me on social media. So it's Mike D. Montague on Twitter or LinkedIn, or you could always email me at mike.montague@sandler.com, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download the 3 biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. For specific questions or comments, call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. The myth about communication is that we think it happened. Your success in business and personal life is determined in a very large part by how well you interact with others. Your ability to effectively relate, communicate, influence, and motivate others is a crucial skill required to succeed. Are you tired that people can't hear what you say because of how you say it? Are you frustrated that you try hard to make people feel more comfortable and it's not working? Are you concerned that this is getting in the way of your ability to foster and maintain relationships on both a personal and professional level? Hi, this is Jim Stevens, and I'll be hosting a class on how to effectively communicate August 29th, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center off of Meridian Road exit and I-84. call 208-429-9275 and ask about taking your extended disc personal analysis in preparation for the August 29th workshop. 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275.
Bran and I were talking about how some business people are growing broke. They end up, their business is growing, but they aren't making any money.
Well, I can talk from experience. I mean, I did $1.7 million when I met you, had 26 employees, and after my coaching with you, we grew another million, right? With 16 employees, so 10 less employees, we did another million. So what does that tell you? It means I was doing something wrong.
Right.
And so really what I see is that when you put the business owner cap on and you're in a growth mode, which a lot of companies right now, they're growing. You know, they've had a lot of success in the last 2 years. They add employees, but at the same time, they can't make payroll every week. And if you can't make payroll every week and you keep adding employees, all you're doing is compounding the same problem every single week. You'll never get ahead.
Hearing you say it, it really does sound insane, but most business people go through the same thought process. They think, I'm too busy, I need more people, I'm struggling to meet payroll, but I got to get the job done, so I'm going to hire more people. When the real issue is far deeper than that, and generally it starts at the very top. It starts with the way the owner or the entrepreneur is thinking, what they're doing, and really what we do in Sandler Training is help you recognize what are you doing that you need to stop, and what are you not doing that you need to start doing.
And welcome to one of my favorite segments of the program, which is Entrepreneur Radio. In this segment, we get to learn more about who I think are the real heroes in our economy and society, and that are business leaders, entrepreneurs, people who have the courage to create a company, sustain a company, manage and build a company. Independent business owners and leaders all around our valley join us on this program. And I'm thrilled to have with me today Scott Kern. Scott is the owner of Shadow Trackers. Did I get that right, Scott?
Yes, that's correct.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Scott, tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do. What's Shadow Trackers?
Okay, Shadow Trackers is a employment background screening firm. We also do some tenant screening. But basically, when local companies or companies in the Intermountain West want to hire someone, they basically send us some information, and we do a little research. And typically, we go back 7 years of counties they've lived in, states they've lived in, and we'll go search and see if they have any criminal records. Sometimes if the position involves money, we'll actually do an employment credit report too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I know the department, State Department for Title, so for title and escrow business.
Yes, yes.
Anybody that has any escrow responsibilities needs to basically get checked with an employment credit report. Yeah, because basically, you know, if you've got a history of someone that maybe is in a lot of debt or maybe has a lot of, maybe a bankruptcy or has judgments, then you probably don't want them having control of money.
Right.
It just might increase possibility of them. Yeah.
Well, that really brings up the question about liability, because what you do, I would guess there's an awful lot of businesses out there that don't do background checks.
Yes.
And may learn to regret it.
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yeah, it's very fair to say. And a lot of times it's the smaller companies, and it's probably a cost reason, which makes sense, you know, especially if you're just starting out. But what we try to do is educate people to let them know that how many times have you seen on the news where a bookkeeper has been embezzling money from someone and they can't ever recover from it? And they didn't recognize it because they're too busy trying to grow and run their company as a small business owner. And you just try to educate them, you know, for very little money if it's compared to what they could be losing.
Oh, the cost would be astronomical.
Yes. Yeah, it's way worth doing.
It's not only the cost in terms of money, but reputation.
Yes.
What does that do to your image in the public? So, Scott, I equate your business. I own a remodeling company, Stronghold Remodeling. And we often get projects from people who tried to do it themselves.
Correct.
They get about halfway into it and they realize, you know what? I'm in over my head, and this is more complicated than I thought. In some ways, I think the internet does us a disservice because I can go click on some background check, and instantly I'm going to get a report that looks legitimate. But I'm guessing that do-it-yourself is not as good as it looks. Talk to us about that.
No, and I understand, too, there's some small business owners that may be trying to save some money, you know, trying to do it themselves. They're experts in what their business is. They're experts in their field. They need to allow someone that's experts in the background screening field to do it. A lot of these click on, get an instant report is just a national database. Those national databases, there's hundreds and hundreds of them. They're not necessarily updated on a constant basis. They could be 9 to 12 months behind. They may not be even searched. Some of them may not search the Department of Corrections. They may not cover everything. Mm. One of the things, too, is that not really knowing where that person has lived, you know, they may only say they lived in one state because they committed a crime in another state. We have ways to search, do what we call a person search. We can find out everywhere they've lived. We can verify whether their application information's true or not, and then we can search that area. They may not have listened, and we might find something.
Does you and your company have access to aspects of the internet that the traditional user would not have access
to? Well, we do have some websites that we pay a subscription to that you have to be in the business to get access to.
So that expedites
yes.
and increases accuracy.
But what we've done is we've built up a network of researchers in every, and we can access every county in the United States. So we have the ability to go search anywhere no matter where they've lived.
So you're physically searching by county, not just by state or region.
Correct. And that's really the only way you're going to find out the actual information.
So now, don't you have to, when you search a county, isn't there a fee to get access to their records?
So it
and is there a timeline?
Yes, it depends on the state, too. Most of the stuff in Idaho, you don't have to clerk search, but there are other states like Nevada and Montana where you have to walk in with a request and a check and hand it to the clerk and hope they get it back to you in a reasonable amount of time. So, there can be costs.
So, and you take care of all that?
Yes. And obviously, that any costs like that are passed on to the client,
sure.
and they're notified that ahead of time. So,
So give me an idea of how much does it cost?
They're typically our average research. Now, what we do is a lot of companies will put, they'll put a base product and a base price.
Yeah.
I tend not to do that because I think every company is different and what they want to search and what they're trying to look for is completely different. So what we do is we try to just set up, okay, what products do you want? And then we'll put a product together. I would say right now our average is about $30 a report.
So for $30, why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You should have your firm look at anybody who you're going to hire.
Correct. And sometimes, now when I say $30, sometimes that could mean, depending on the state, the only way you're going to get the information is literally go into the clerk's office, hand them a $10 or a $15 check, and hope they like you enough that they'll get the report back to you. And then so we may pass that expense on to them, and so that may increase the report.
Well, I mean, even if it's a couple hundred bucks, it's still a no-brainer because having somebody on your team who may jeopardize your reputation can be a big problem. I know I own a remodeling company, and years ago we had someone, this was before we knew, we learned the hard way doing background checks, and we had a client who had some jewelry stolen. We could never pin it down to any person, but I have a hunch it was related to one of my employees who I didn't do a good background check. So we covered the loss for the client because that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And we immediately instituted the policy that if you're going to work for our company, you're going to have a background check. So I think it just makes sense. What do you think are the biggest reasons that people avoid doing that?
I think a lot of it has to do possibly with the cost, even though, you know, we just describe it's really, when it comes down to it, it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
It could be a time constraint, too. But a lot of times we'll have clients who they go ahead and have the employee start, but they understand that they're going to wait for the background check to come back, and it may change whether they're employed with them or not.
So in that case, are they telling the candidate they've hired, we're giving you the job, but
it's subject
pending.
Subject to a satisfactory background check. Yep.
So are you working with, I know you work with some major large accounts nationally.
Mm-hmm.
You work with small companies. So tell us about the demographic of the type of companies you serve.
We have a lot. Well, we kind of have a wholesale and a retail division. So our wholesale division is more of a research division where we're searching individual counties in every state in the U.S.
Mm.
And that's when we work with the big national background screening firms. And so we're talking about, we've got at least two in the top 10 biggest.
Really?
And then our retail side is where we work with smaller to mid-sized companies. We have a lot in Idaho, but we have clients in Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Montana, pretty much everywhere in the U.S. where we do the actual retail, what we call the full scope, where we search every state they've lived in, we compile the report, and we supply the report to them.
So how do you land those out-of-state gigs? How did you find those clients, or how did they find you?
A lot of times, you know, with the power of the internet,
right.
A lot of times they'll do a Google search and find us.
Mm.
And then what we'll do is, and I'm not just saying this because we're the owner, we have a process that we've perfected, and I think we do as accurate and good a job as anybody. And once we start working with these clients, they'll tell other people. So we landed a client, I don't know, I would say 7 or 8 years ago in Colorado. And next thing you know, we've now got 5 clients in that area because they basically refer.
They tell each other. Yeah, that's how businesses grow.
Yep.
So talk to us a little bit, Scott, about the liability. So if I'm going to have you do a background check, in my mind, I'm pushing some of the responsibility and liability to you.
Yes. Yeah, we basically, first of all, as the employer, you need to have authorization from that person.
Candidate.
Yeah, from the candidate to get the background check. It's not our responsibility to get a copy of that. It's their responsibility to have it.
Yeah.
We're regulated under the federal credit. It's FCRA guidelines. And we're certified through our national association, which is very important
because
you have to meet, obviously, certain guidelines. But our job basically is to search the records and supply that information. Now, we do have liability only to the extent that if it's wrong and we're informed that it's wrong in writing, then we do our due diligence to prove that that is incorrect. And if we do come back and say, you know, you're correct, the record was wrong, we've been able to prove that, then there is no liability. Mm. So we can actually be wrong as long as what we reported wasn't completely erroneous.
Yeah.
It's that we go back and verify exactly. Now, we've been in business since 1992. We've been doing the retail side of the business probably for the past 15, 16 years. Mm. And we've only had two people that have come back and said the information was incorrect.
Yeah.
And we were able to prove that it was correct.
Oh, so, really?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
And in that case, is it incorrect because the record's showing I did something that I don't think I did?
Correct.
And then I'm protesting, and then lo and behold, I really did do it.
You would be amazed. We've actually had people call us and say, you need to get my job back. Can you call the company and correct the situation? We're like, well, did you do it? Yeah. Well, there's really not much more we can
right,
do for
right.
you.
That's kind of gutsy, isn't
it's
it?
Amazing. Yes, it is. It's amazing.
Spent a little bit of time getting to know Scott, and a couple of things jump out at me. Number one is you really need to have somebody who knows their stuff taking care of the things that you need done. And one of the background that Scott has and one of the keen things that he's interested in is personal development. So talk to us a little bit about the importance that has in both you and your company as a whole.
Yeah, I think especially any entrepreneur or anybody working for anybody that, say, is in sales or anything, I think you've got to constantly be improving yourself. One of my mentors, Jim Rohn, always said that in order to attract success, you must become attractive yourself.
Yeah.
So what I basically do is I am constantly, I have a commute, 40-minute commute into work, 40-minute yeah. commute home,
yeah.
and I listen to sales books, personal development books, everything I listen to, your show,
yeah.
we can download the podcast now and I can listen to that, but I constantly am trying to improve myself with knowledge, with just listening to other successful people. I think that is so important because you are, if you're not constantly improving and going forward, then I think you're taking a step back and you're not going to be there when you need to be there.
Boy, it's so true. And we can, like you said during the break, you can become an expert on sports, but how's that going to help you?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm not saying you can't enjoy sports.
Right.
But, you know, listening to...
Or the news. Oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
Oh, the news is so negative, too, that that can affect you, too. I try really hard not to listen
yeah,
to mainstream.
Yeah, I used to be addicted to news. And probably about 4 or 5 months ago, I said, you know what? I've had it.
Yep.
And I feel a lot better
oh, yeah.
not knowing what's going
oh,
on.
Oh, I'm much more positive. There's no negativity out there. So,
it's
yeah.
amazing. No, that personal development is really important. So how does that show through in your company? What kind of things do you do with for your employees to help make sure they're on their cutting edge?
Well, basically what we're doing is we're constantly asking for improvements. We're constantly asking them for their ideas. We try to explain to them that in order for everyone to get better, we must all contribute and give our ideas.
Right.
And we must, and in order to improve, and I guarantee you, the people that work for us, they have a heck of a lot more knowledge on what they're doing than I do.
Right.
And so if I'm not getting the information from them too,
you're missing it.
I'm missing it.
That's
completely.
A great point. So talk to our listeners a little bit about what took you into this line of work.
Yeah, basically it was founded by a family member, a cousin, back in 1992. And my brother and myself looked at purchasing it probably about 6 or 7 years ago. Just wasn't the right time, wasn't going to work. And then in 2012, we started discussing it again and basically came to an agreement and made it work in 2013.
Wow.
I had also started a previous business, so I've always had the entrepreneurship inside
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
it was a mortgage brokerage
yeah.
because I was a banker for a lot of years.
Oh.
And just, it'll make a lot of sense to you. I started that company in 2007. Something happened in 2008, 2009. That might
good
have,
time to start
yeah,
a mortgage company.
I had 9 great months. So, you know, they say you have to start and maybe fail a couple times
yep.
before you figure it out.
Yep.
So, you know, I've learned
it's
from
a good
that.
Learning experience.
Yes, it was. Very
yeah.
good learning experience.
Yeah. And so now you've been at the helm of this organization for 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
Give some advice to our listeners about what does it take to be a visionary, an entrepreneur, and then step into the role of heading up a company that employs, what, 16, 18
yes.
people
yes.
and has a worldwide footprint?
Basically, and if I had any kind of advice to give, I would say there is always a way to do something. So if you have an idea, a concept, do the research. One of the phrases I like to tell people is if you're going somewhere you've never been before and with the internet and Google, what's the first thing you do?
Right.
You get directions.
You look it up.
I guarantee you there's somebody out there that has already done that path, and all you have to do is find them,
yeah.
do the research, read. You can find the information. It's all there. And if you want it bad enough,
yeah.
you can go find it.
Yeah, you got to be a bootstrapper.
Yep.
You got to figure it out.
Yep, I completely. And I always think there's a way to do something. You just have to find it.
So, Scott Kern, give your contact information, Scott, in case somebody out there would like to reach out to you.
Yep, you can reach us on our website at www.shadowtrackers.com. And then We have a 1-877-895-0074 is our toll-free number.
If you're a business owner, manager, or leader listening to us and you currently don't have the practice of doing background checks, pick up the phone. Call Scott. You will save yourself a ton of money. Just think of the peace of mind that somebody gets knowing I have done a background check and I'm confident that what I have seen and interviewed really is bona fide.
Well, and sometimes too, we may not find a record on someone, but down the road they may do something wrong, but you've done your due diligence by at least checking on them.
And you've got a paper trail. You've got a paper trail.
You've done everything you can do.
All right, and if you listeners happen to know somebody who might be a good fit for this program, reach out to me at 208-429-9275. You can email us at crossroads@sandler.com. If you don't feel like you're qualified to be on the program, but you'd like to get there and would like some help, give us a call, too. We might be able to help you get your business ready and on the road to success. This is Jim Stevens. We're going to be back just after this.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Our initial no-cost analysis will help you see the 4 steps required to achieve success. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.
So far, I've been speaking with Sandler trainer Mike Montague, and we're talking about specific actions required to look at social selling from a sales perspective as opposed from a marketing perspective. So we're going to go into a little more detail. Mike, talk to us about what kind of attitude do I need to have as I approach this? What actions should I take, and how should I take them?
Yeah, I think the first one there, it really is the attitude that when I'm teaching people about social selling, the first thing is about half of the audience is not tech savvy, and the other half is, and both of them make mistakes. So you really have to look at whatever your weakness is or your strengths are and play to those or learn the stuff that's outside of it. So when I'm up in front of a stage and I'm training on social selling, I get a lot of people that will say, I'm not very tech savvy. And look, there's 3 billion people on Facebook these days. There's no way you're the 3 billionth worst person at the internet. So these tools are very easy to use. The learning curve is really short. Just jump in and try it. My attitude here is you can't break the internet. So just go out there and try it. Nothing bad is going to happen. It's just going to take a little bit of a learning curve.
It's a great attitude to have. I love that. So my behavior, if I believe I can't break the internet, then my behavior is going to do something. What should I do?
Right. So take some very simple actions, like set up your profile and make sure that it is attracting prospects and not job offers. A lot of people, especially on LinkedIn, are talking about how great they are and not the problems that they solve for other people. So nobody cares how many times you've made quota or what your last job was. What they care about is them. What's in it for them? What are problems you can solve for them? And then start having conversations. Start commenting on prospects' posts or liking stuff that they share, and you'll start getting FaceTime with these people. And just do something to get the minimum level of activity going there to start more interesting conversations.
So there's a debate that goes on between how frequent should I be posting on LinkedIn? Is this something I should be doing 5 times a day, once a day? What's your belief on that, Mike?
Well, all of the research shows that you can't post too much, but I know you also don't want to spend your entire day on social media. So blocking out some time is really good, and maybe just spend 15 minutes at the morning, lunchtime, and then at the end of the day to just check in with social media, see if anything's changed, maybe post something that you find interesting. I think minimum activity should be once a day liking or sharing something on there just so that people know you're on there and you're active, but maximum could really be about how many conversations and how many prospects you need. So, Jim, we could do the cookbook thing here, but it really depends on what you're selling. If you only need 1 sale to a hospital in a year, that's a different conversation than if you need 100 sales a week for some sort of B2C sale, right?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point, because what I'm selling is going to determine how I sell it, because the audience changes. If I have a very clear and distinct audience, my message and the network that I'm sending it to is very fine finite as opposed to something that is more broad-based. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So think about your market that you're selling into. Do they need a lot of information? Is it a mass market? Are there thousands of prospects, or do you have hundreds or tens of prospects? In which case, your behavior will be a lot more deliberate there.
This is a point where I think my goal is to be interesting, or is it, should I be interested, right? Am I sending something that other people will like to read, or am I connecting with things they have published so that they're feeling me give them a stroke by following them? Or maybe it's a blending.
Absolutely. I think it's a little bit of both, but it's more the second part, being interested. That what you post is really just more about a marketing thing or getting your FaceTime, or like you said, really coming up with something that's interesting and valuable to the person that's watching or listening. So there's nothing wrong with creating a great educational post that brings value to people. However, what people more care about is themselves. So the more you're interested in them, the more you're listening on social media. Think about that, Jim. There are billions of people around the world begging for somebody to pay attention to them. If you're in sales, that's probably something you should do, right?
Right. So pay attention to the people who are your ideal client. Before long, they may start to recognize you just because you've liked several of their posts and you've commented on some of the things that they're passionate about.
Yeah, we all see who comments on our stuff, right? We all see who likes it.
Yeah.
We're counting those likes and getting those strokes.
That's so true. So we've talked about the attitude I need to have, some of the actions I should take. Talk to us a little bit about the right and the wrong way to approach social selling.
Good. So when we get to technique here and reaching out, especially like cold introductions to prospects, there's two basic ways you can do it. One is use your social media connections to get an introduction or a referral into that company. And that's always going to be my first choice because it has such a greater return on your investment of time and a greater chance that it actually closes. So first thing I do if I have a prospect on my list is go to their LinkedIn page, find out, is there anybody that knows this person? If I see, oh, Karen is connected to them, Karen's a great friend of mine or maybe a client, I call her up and say, Karen, how well do you know Jim and would you mind introducing me? And that's a really easy conversation to have. A lot of times she'll say, you know what, I don't know him that well, I met him at a chamber thing once, or she'll say, oh, we're great friends, I work with him all the time, I'll be happy to introduce you. And then you can go ahead and set that appointment.
So if I'm using that approach, well, I have used that approach multiple times and gotten some version of a digital blank stare. I really don't know them. Does it make more sense to ask for three or four at one time so that there's more of a multiple choice?
Yeah, you can do that. And I think it depends on which way you're prospecting. And if you have a specific list, like I said, yeah, and I'm looking for a connection, you might only have one or two people to try here. But another great way to do that is go to Karen's list and say, Karen, I went through your connections and here's 10 people. So every meeting on my calendar, I would bring 5 to 10 names and say, disqualify these people for me. So most salespeople will say, who do you know that will pay me money? Can you give me a referral? What I want you to do is do the opposite of that. Say, I went on here, I don't know if these people are any good. If any of them are jerks, if they don't pay their bill, if you don't know them very well, scratch anybody off this list and disqualify the ones that won't be good. And then let's talk about the ones that are left, or put a star by somebody that you would call if you were in my job tomorrow.
I'm probably, I'd say at least 20 years Mike senior. And in Sandler, we train this thing called pay time, no pay time. And pay time is doing things that cause the cash register to ring. And no pay time is things that waste our time. In my mind, full transparency here, Mike, anything that's called social media is no pay time. Talk me off the ledge here.
Well, we've already mentioned it here on the show, which is active versus passive. So if you're scheduling social media posts and content marketing, which I do, you know, for Sandler, I'll schedule those no pay time. You can use a tool like Hootsuite or Buffer to schedule all of your social media posts for the next month, and then you don't have to worry about it. Do that on Saturday when you're sitting around watching the football game or something. And then
Good idea. Active stuff
is actually reaching out to prospects, making those referrals calls, picking up the phone and asking Karen if she knows somebody that could do business with you, to me, is a fair pay time activity. What do you think?
We call prospecting avoidance getting ready to get ready. So if I find myself spending too much time going through someone's list or researching, for me, that tips me over into no pay time. So there comes a point where, for me, I use time blocking. So I'm going to give myself five minutes, and in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to work on figuring out who in this circle of influence do I want connected to. And as soon as the dinger rings, I'm done. Now I'm taking action.
Yeah, I love that. And that's one of the games I like to play with salespeople is set a timer for 15 minutes when you're doing social selling. And when the timer goes off, are you watching cat videos or are you talking to a prospect? And then you'll know whether you're doing the right thing or not, right?
That's awesome. Mike Montague is my guest. Mike, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Sure. It's Mike D. Montague at Twitter or LinkedIn, or you can email me at mike.montague@sandler.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, reach out to me by emailing crossroads@sandler.com, or you can reach out and ask how to subscribe by calling 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. The myth about communication is that we think it happened. Your success in business and personal life is determined in a very large part by how well you interact with others. Your ability to effectively relate, communicate, influence, and motivate others is a crucial skill required to succeed. Are you tired that people can't hear what you say because of how you say it? Are you frustrated that you try hard to make people feel more comfortable and it's not working? Are you concerned that this is getting in the way of your ability to foster and maintain relationships on both a personal and professional level? Hi, this is Jim Stevens, and I'll be hosting a class on how to effectively communicate August 29th, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center off of Meridian Road exit and I-84. Call 208-429-9275 and ask about taking your extended disc personal analysis in preparation for the August 29th workshop. 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Mike, so far we've talked about the conceptual, but I'd like to get us into some of the technical. I don't suppose you'd be able to walk me through some of your technical execution using the Sandler approach in social selling.
Sure. I think the one everybody asked me about is, how do I reach out cold? What do I say in an email or an in-mail message or a direct message through social media to a prospect? What do I put in there? And I got some great tips for everybody. The first one is, it's all about the subject line. And it's amazing that through, you know, just think of how many email messages you've received over your lifetime now. Email's been around about 20, 25 years. And we can really spot salesy fake messages, and everybody still tries to write them. So you know this, Jim. It's the traditional sales thing that if you say, hey, Jim, I can help you maximize your revenue and decrease costs by XYZ in a subject line, people are just going to hit delete.
Right.
So one word. Human beings are lazy. Human beings write, I have a question, introduction, or help is a great subject line. If you just write the word help, people are going to open that email and see who needs help and what the help is, right?
Wow.
Or open the question subject line to find out what the question is. So that's tip number one.
You're suggesting that we might even put a question in the subject line. Now, for me, I'm a little more verbose. I'm sending out an email to my clients to try to get them to attend a cruise.
Right.
And so my subject line I put in, and I want you to critique it, I put in cruise the Caribbean and write it off.
Well, it's not bad, but again, that to me sounds like an advertisement. That could be coming from the Caribbean cruise lines or something else and be an automated message, where what I would put is the word question as the subject line, and then first line of your email, write, would you like to cruise the Caribbean and write it off? Then we're going to use our 30-second commercial. So right after that, and emails have to be super short. If you can make it two lines, great, but five or less sentences. So the next sentence is those pain points and either how you know the person or, you know, the reason you're reaching out, what the trigger event is, but get right into less than three pain points. I work with people who do X, Y, or Z. And then the third sentence is, and I solve that problem better or differently than everybody else because of X or A, B, and C.
And X is your market differentiator.
Right. So let's, you know, do one and what it would actually sound like. If we were doing one for Sandler Training, it might be something like, you know, question, and then say, Jim, I noticed that you liked my post on selling strategies to, you know, whatever, get ahead of the competition, something like that. And say, I work with business owners that are struggling with getting in front of enough prospects, closing enough of the business they're getting in front of, or closing at the margins that they want. And we do this in a revolutionary way that actually actually build sustainable and lasting results through ongoing reinforcement. And then we need some sort of call to action or ask. So depending on what the relationship is, it might be, could we set up a phone call or reply to this message and let me know if that's anything you're remotely interested in or if I should stop calling.
Great. I think that that's a great call to action because it lets them off the hook and gets you to stop chasing somebody who has made up their mind they're really not interested. And I think the quality of your pain points is going to determine how often people reply. So I think those pain points need to be first person and emotional. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It is all about hitting those pain points then and then delivering something that's unique and that unique selling proposition and having those two things match up. So you can't say, I work with people who can't sleep at night and then say, we have something else that doesn't have anything to do with sleep. So match up your pain points to your unique selling proposition, and you got to be different than everybody else that's calling
it. Yeah, if it sounds like everything else, they're just going to delete it.
Absolutely. And then, like you said, getting the no is okay here. So at the end, we want to make it super easy for them to respond, because if we say, you know, click this link and fill out these 95 pages of data to set a 4-hour appointment with me, nobody's going to do that.
Right.
But if we just say, reply to this email and say yes or no, people will do that.
Yeah, make it simple. So, Mike, what other strategies do you have from a tactical perspective that will help increase our ability to sell using social media?
Well, we've talked about two big ones. So we just did cold email outreach. The other one is asking for referrals. And I think really, if you go to a meeting with 5 to 10 names that you want to ask that person if they would be good introductions or qualified prospects for you, that's an awesome one. Number three, though, that we haven't talked about is doing your own research and finding and qualifying prospects on LinkedIn or other social media accounts. So you can do an advanced search in LinkedIn and start searching for company size, industry, whatever makes good clients for you, and start coming up with names. I know a lot of salespeople will come to me and say, I just don't know who to call, or I don't know what I would say if I did call. So your Sandler trainer can help you out with what you would say, but I think social media will help you out with who do I call. Look up your current best clients, and LinkedIn will give you similar companies to them. Those are 6 companies that LinkedIn thinks is most similar to somebody that's your ideal client. That, to me, is a great list to start with.
So now, is that buying an upgrade version of LinkedIn? Because I'm sure some of our listeners don't know of that or take advantage of it.
Yeah, I always say these are available free, but there are always more advanced or more filters that you can put on it when you have the pro version. And I think of this like a gym membership. Just because you join the gym and you pay LinkedIn $74 a month, it is not going to help you sell anymore. Using the tool every single day, you will make way more than your $74 a month. So if you're going to get in there and really actively socially sell, it's a no-brainer investment. Sign up.
So, Mike, in thinking about social selling, what are the, you mentioned KPIs or cookbook, what are the top 2 or 3 things you think somebody, you've got to at least do this every day?
Sure. I think, first of all, make sure that you're posting something. I know that is where everybody gets distracted. They don't know what to post or what to share. You can find stuff or just like and share other people's stuff. Curate the best information that you can find for your audience and schedule something out at least once a day so that people know that you're alive and you're still active on social media. The second thing is do some sort of proactive research and reaching out to prospects. So even if it's 10 a week, research 10 prospects and make 10 dials or send 10 of those cold email things a week just to do something to help fill your funnel. After that, I think everything else is great.
How important is it to accompany a digital outreach with a phone call?
Huge. Follow-up is what makes all of the difference. So we recommend up to 6 touches will actually increase your chances of getting a hold of that person. Most salespeople on social media give up after 1.5 tries.
Jim. Oh my gosh.
So studies show your chances of landing the appointment increase through the first 6 touches, which could be an email, could be a text, it could be a social message, it could be a phone call, and mixing those will give you the best result because we don't know their preferred method. But as soon as we reach that person, ask them, say, hey, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Should I email, text, call? What do you prefer? And then use that from then going forward. But when they're prospects, try all of those things.
Awesome. Great, great information. My guest today is Mike Montague. Mike, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Sure. You can follow or reach out to me at Mike D. Montague at LinkedIn or Twitter, or just email me at mike.montague@sandler.com, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My call is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Are you tired of forgiving your employees for not trying? Are you bored with the daily ritual of at least or just enough that you allow to haunt you each weekend? Are you ready to test yourself and see if you could do it? Are you ready to test your team? Call us at 208-429-9275. Ask to set up a discovery meeting and we'll set up a conversation. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement. The myth about communication is that we think it happened. Your success in business and personal life is determined in a very large part by how well you interact with others. Your ability to effectively relate, communicate, influence, and motivate others is a crucial skill required to succeed. Are you tired that people can't hear what you say because of how you say it? Are you frustrated that you try hard to make people feel more comfortable and it's not working? Are you concerned that this is getting in the way of your ability to foster and maintain relationships on both a personal and professional level? Hi, this is Jim Stevens, and I'll be hosting a class on how to effectively communicate August 29th, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center off of Meridian Road exit and I-84. Call 208-429-9275 and ask about taking your extended disc personal analysis in preparation for the August 29th workshop. 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Mike Montague. Mike is a Sandler trainer from Kansas City. He's actually with our home office. He's the director of content marketing for Sandler International. Mike and I have been talking about social selling. And, Mike, I want to shift gears. Sandler is really a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. And I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, or challenges that have developed in your life through learning the transparency necessary for personal improvement. What are you working on in your life?
Wow, that's a tough one, but I am definitely always doing it. We mentioned in the first segment that my dad's been a Sandler trainer for 22 years now, and I took the first class when I was a junior in high school, and it kind of bit me with the bug of self-improvement. And so I've done a ton of stuff over the years, a lot around time management. And I got to tell you, Jim, just to be honest, I'm weird. I'm one of these people that have really gotten into just goal setting, affirmations. I watch what I eat. I try and do exercising. I'm crazy about my personal productivity. But the one that I struggle with the most is probably balance, because I can easily overwork or overdo these things as well. So finding something that allows me to keep all of the balls in the air at the same time is really what I'm working on these days.
So, great challenge. I wish I had your problem. Mine is not hyper-discipline. Mine would be the opposite. I would be happy being totally undisciplined and getting other people to do my job for me.
Yeah, see, I end up doing too much. I always say yes, or I see how much I can get done in a day, and that's not always working on the right thing, I think, which is really tough. And especially as you move up in your career or you take on more responsibility, sometimes it is about getting other people to do the work and not doing it yourself. And that can be a really struggle. And you have to use all of the Sandler tools in bonding rapport and upfront contracts and questioning skills to make sure that your team is happy and you're not taking on too much or being too much of a burden to them by the crazy work.
Right. Well, I think that's a great challenge that you're having, Mike, is something that everybody, not everybody, but anybody who is accommodating and really helpful by nature tends to say yes to their own detriment. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you have found that gives you courage to say, you know, I'd like to help, but I can't?
Well, we've even mentioned a couple of them so far. Time blocking has been huge for me. And since I work from home and on my own schedule, it's really great that I can set what those hours are. But I also need to be careful because Sandler's an international organization in 31 countries around the world in almost every time zone.
Right.
So I could work 24/7, right, if I took calls. So
Right. Setting
aside specific time to write, specific times to do interviews, specific times to check email, and then specific times to sleep and to go exercise or take a lunch break really helped me differentiate what those times are for, and then you just got to have the guts to stick to it and say, I'd love to help you. The next available slot I have is next Tuesday, and it's not this afternoon, right?
You know, I love that, using your strength, which is discipline and structure, to help set up those boundaries that allow you to provide barriers for others to respect your time. Oftentimes, we're in a position where we might have to say no up the food chain. So how do you mitigate that challenge?
I think that one is a tough one, and I would say, again, saying no isn't necessarily my strength, but there are times when I disagree, and I think always asking the boss for priorities is the easiest way to have them sort out what they actually want you to do. So I can be a good soldier too. If somebody says to do something that I don't agree is the right thing to do, I'll still do it. But what I ask them is something like, would you prefer me to do that or do this over here? Which would be the biggest impact? And so usually if you're saying no, it's for a reason, because you believe something else is more important. So whenever you ask the boss for that clarification, it usually helps sort out where they expect you or where they think the highest return on investment of your time is.
I think this issue, if you boil it down to its core, and this may not relate to you personally, Mike, but just generally speaking, comes from one of two things. One is, I want other people to like me, and I'm afraid if I tell them no, they won't. So I don't want to disappoint right. others. And I think if you turn that coin over, the other side of it is, I don't think I'm worthy enough to tell someone else no. I'm not as valuable as you are, therefore I must defer my priorities to you. Talk us through your thoughts on that.
Well, I absolutely believe that, and it goes back to a core Sandler principle of goal setting, and David Sandler had the rule, you either have a plan or you're a part of someone else's. And I think that solves both sides of that issue, because if you're somebody that's just want to be liked, if you have something that's more important to that than that you're trying to accomplish, it'll help you say, hey, I would love to help you, but I got this goal over here I'm pursuing. Maybe I can help you in a different time, or I can't help you. And then the same thing with the self-esteem issue is that once you have something that you're passionate about and you're pursuing and that's worthy of your life's effort, you start putting value on that that's higher than somebody else's values that they're bringing to you or those other needs. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's really about getting clear about, where do I bring the most value, not only to my job, but to my life? And am I going to be happy at the end of the year that I spent a whole year of my life and I only have, 80, 100 of them? So that's 1% of my life pursuing this at the end of the year. So was I making other people happy? Was I doing their busy work? Or was I passionately pursuing something that I'm excited about?
And what was the cost of putting others ahead of me? And I think that often is something that we neglect. I call it misplaced loyalty. I'm more loyal to a client who needs me than I am to my family and the evidence is, it's Friday night and what am I doing? I'm missing my kids' ball game. I know for me, when I bought the Sandler franchise, there was a period of my two oldest children's lives, probably between age about 8 and 11 or 12, that I just have almost no recollection because I was spending way too much time in unpaid consulting. I didn't know it. When I bought the Sandler franchise and learned this concept of unpaid consulting and using the upfront contract to get the buyer to have skin in the game equal to what I was offering, that gave me the freedom. I saved 30 hours a work week. My work week was 90 hours. I dropped that down to 60 within 6 months just by stopping the insanity of doing for others at my own expense. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for me too, prioritization there is key, because your family can't always come first, or otherwise your business is going to fail and you're going to solve.
That's right.
And your business can't always come first, or your relationship and your family is going to fail. So setting clear guidelines for yourself of when things are important, and then not feeling guilty about leaving the other one behind. You can only do one thing. So if you're going to take Friday off and spend it with the family, enjoy the time with the family. Don't feel guilty about not being at work. And same thing, when you're at work, don't feel guilty about not being with your family. Just realize that you've chosen these priorities and set a specific plan to do so.
So, Mike, how do you facilitate a personal audit to make sure you're in that balance? Any suggestions?
Well, man, the easiest one for me personally is when I step on the scale in the morning, because when my weight is going up, I am not a balanced person. And for That's anybody, it could be something else. Maybe it's your sleep. Yeah, if you're not getting 8 hours of sleep, something might be out of whack. Find out what those triggers, or we've even talked about leading indicators. What are these indicators that you're out of whack? Because it's really hard to read the label from inside the bottle, to to tell when you're doing something stupid because we're all doing what we think is best. So we need some sort of outside trigger or number to tell us, hey, you're out of whack right now.
And then probably need some version of accountability. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, well, you bring up a great point, which is, again, getting outside of yourself is have a coach. You can hire a Sandler trainer to look at your schedule, your cookbook, your calendar, and say, hey, what are you doing and what are you not doing? You can find a boss, a peer accountability partner, your spouse, anybody outside of yourself. Again, we are doing what we think is best every single day. We need somebody else to tell us when we're being stupid. And Jim, I know you brought this up before with small business owners, everybody usually underneath them knows what the business owner's problem is. They just don't have the guts to tell it. So you need somebody that can be brutally honest with you about what you're actually doing that's causing all the problems in your life.
Yeah, that's a great point. And if you don't have anyone who's that honest, that's a good leading indicator that you're probably out of whack. Mike Montague is my guest today. Mike, one last time, how should somebody reach out to you in case they'd like to have a conversation?
You bet. It's Mike D. Montague at LinkedIn or Twitter, or you can just shoot me an email, mike.montague@sandler.com, and I'll answer any questions.
And thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. If they're trapped in a comfort zone, frustrated because they're living with just good enough, ready to accept chaos or volatility in daily business and customer relationships, prone to learn the hard way through trial and error, hoping eventually you'll figure it out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me, 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.